Don't just exist. Live. Live on AWR SID Media.
Joining us now for our Ask a Pastor segment is Pastor Mutsia, who has given us some perspective once again today. For our question for today, it says, how does Christianity address issues of social justice and inequality, particularly in wealth distribution? Pastor Mutsia, good afternoon to you. Welcome, and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us.
Good afternoon to you and your listeners.
Our question for today, Pastor, is how does Christianity address issues of social justice and inequality, particularly in wealth distribution? May I just suggest that perhaps there is a misprint there, because it says social justice, but it uses a series of examples that implies social injustice. So I would love to read that to mean, how does the Christian, or how does Christianity address issues of social injustice and inequality, particularly in wealth distribution? Does it make sense?
It makes sense. It's a difficult one. But when we look at it, we realize that Christianity does address some issues of social injustices. However, when it comes to this one of wealth, to be honest, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced if Christianity is doing enough. Of course, there are biblical references where we would find that, for an example, you look at the early believers. Mm. Acts chapter 2, Acts chapter 4 would speak of how they sold their possessions,
yes,
how they shared resources. But to be honest, can we really say that the spirit that worked in Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4, it's still the spirit that we see nowadays? I think it'd be very difficult. Of course, we try to be able to address issues of poverty, but to a greater extent, I don't see how, or I am not convinced that Christianity is doing enough. I mean, for an example, we would get to a space where it is poverty stricken. And we get there with our food parcels. We get there with a pair of shoes, you know, a few clothing items, and we say, we pat ourselves in the back to say we have done a great work. But have we really done that? So I'm sorry, but today I'm not convinced that Christianity is actually within that space of wealth distribution. No. The rich are becoming richer and the poor are becoming poorer, most especially within Christianity itself. And you would find the rich saying to the poor, to say, hey, let us pray. And you ask yourself, what are we praying for when you have more than enough resources that we can share? So it's a bit of a difficult one, this one.
So what does God say about inequality? And I ask this directly and pointedly because it appears as though God is collaborating with the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer. We see God blessing individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And it implies that God is interested in some and not all being rich. So what is God's position as far as inequality and social injustice?
From a Christian perspective, it would be difficult to really attempt to answer that one. But maybe let me borrow from a Hebraic perspective. When you look at the Jewish people as part of halakha laws, it is a sin for a Jew to be in proximity to a Jew that is poor, that is struggling. It is a law that Jew must actually empower their fellow Jewish brethren to be rich. And also, we also get to see from their lifestyle that they would then say that the issue of we would obviously understand that they still keep to the issue of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. So just before the Day of Atonement every year, what they do is that they go into a season of repentance, a season of change, a season of talking to God, because they believe that just before the Day of Atonement, God deals with the sin of the past year. And depending on how you have come back to God, then God prepares a blessing that will carry you for the following year. So that is why we see them really sharing resources. But when it comes to Christians, it seems as if it's a one-man Peter Balak sort of a thing, whereby I become so selfish as Mutsiye to say, no, God has blessed me, and this is my blessing alone. And it becomes a problem for me to share with others how I have amassed the resources. So it's very difficult. It would be unfair on God to say that God only favors a certain few individuals, because you would find others would claim that they have been blessed by God when they are into human trafficking, when they are into drugs and all of these things. But of course, there are people that God blesses. And it becomes a challenge now for us to be able to say God favors others, but he does not favor others. But I think the greater principle here is in this, that we need to understand that we are stewards of every resource that we find our hands having. And so we need to be a community that shares resources, a community that is not selfish. When we understand that all of these things belong to the Lord, for even Haggai would say silver and gold belong to the Lord. So it becomes a problem within the Christian space whereby Mutsiye has silver and gold and Mutsiye says, no, this silver and gold is mine. I have worked hard for it.
So you're saying it's unfair to say God favors some?
Definitely. I feel it would be unfair to say God favors others for riches when he does not favor others. Of course, the dealings of God are not the dealings of men. There are some situations where we would find that perhaps God is depriving certain individuals of material resources because they will end up worshipping, or because their heart is so rooted in these things, they don't care about God. So as to those that God allows to have riches, to have materials, to experience these blessings, it is good. But we cannot really say that, no, God is not fair. He gives these and he does not give these others.
I ask this because on a macro scale, we see God choosing a nation amongst the world's nations. And he chooses that to be his own, the Israelite nation. Not only does God demonstrate favoritism amongst the nations of the world, he dispossesses 7 or 8 nations in Palestine in order to place these new adopted children of his, the Israelites, and he calls it Canaan, the promised land. He promises other people the land of other people. The land belongs to the Canaanites, but he promises Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that, no, don't worry, this land that belongs to these people, I am going to give it to you and your descendants. I'm not quite sure if that is not a demonstration of favoritism.
With the example that you have made, it really makes sense, especially if we look at it from a political point of view. But when we look at the space itself. It belongs to God. So whomever God chooses to say, you will become the steward of the space, it is the prerogative of
granted.
God.
Granted, that's well granted. That is not even in dispute. God can choose to give whoever he wants to give his land. But we're talking about the injustice of the recipients. The recipients are unjustly blessed by this God. God gives God's land to some and does give God's land to some. He gives minerals to some and doesn't give minerals to some. It appears as though God is unjust in his distribution of wealth and resources. It appears as though his wealth distribution is apartheid-like.
Correct. I agree with you. I will not disagree with that thought, because that's how it seems to be portrayed. However, I think we also are limited in terms of the view of God. We are looking at, oh, here, these are favored, these are not favored. But we do not know. Perhaps there could be deeper reasons as to why God decides to say, these I will allow them to have these minerals, right, and these I will not allow. But when we look at Israel, though being favored, though being chosen, nepotism, whatever we may call it, then God says, the other nations, they will come to you and they will say, how are you achieving 1, 2, 3? Direct them to the principles that I have given you in the Torah, so that they too, when they want to achieve or to tap into this pool of resources, they may know that our God has given us these resources, and these are the principles of how we handle them. And so if you want to be part of us, then you just need to take note of the principles, the measures that God has put into place. And I think perhaps the design of God is to say, let Israel be rich, and as other nations observe, let them come closer, because it's another way of God revealing himself. In the Old Testament, it's another way where we would say it's a concept of evangelism, because these people did not evangelize. And so when they would do well in agriculture, they do well into business, and other nations wonder, why is it that we are not getting it right? And then they would take them to the principles that point back to God. And hence we see other people from other nations ended up being part of Israel because of these blessings. So perhaps that is the design of God, to say, I will bless this particular individual because in proximity there are people that may not care about me. But once they are exposed to the life of this person, when they see the blessing of God in this person's life and they inquire this person through his life, through her life, they will then lead and direct these people back to me.
So because of his noble and holy reasons that we don't know, we can say God is unfair, unjust, and unequal, because he's got holy reasons to be unjust, unfair, and unequal.
We can definitely say that, and say that is the holiness of God. There's a text that would then say, when God kills, it's a holy thing.
Because where is that text in Bundes?
Pardon?
You're saying there's a text that says that?
Yes, there's a text that speaks to the effect of saying, thou shalt not kill, but when God instructs you to kill, it is a holy God, and that thing is holy. He has
where is that text in Bundes? Where is the text that says that? I've never come across that text. I understand the thinking behind that sentiment, but the text itself, I've never seen it. I'd love to read that for our listeners. Do share with us where is that text.
Maybe can I provide it tomorrow, because at the top of my head I don't have it, and currently I am not with my resources. I'm in town.
Okay, not a problem.
I don't have it.
Not a problem. We'll remind you tomorrow, Mfundis. Not a problem. Not go ahead.
Yes. So when we look at how God deals with certain things, we look at it and we say, but God is unjust. But we do not know his thinking. Hence, Isaiah would say, his ways and our ways are not the same. And because we are thinking from a human point of view, we are limited in the divine sphere. So, of course, we are also justified to have our opinion. And hence, a songwriter would say we will understand it in the by and by. the things that we thought that God was disadvantaging us, we would actually realize that, no, oh, it was for our benefit.
So when there are people who are poor, that's for our benefit. When there are people who are slaves, that's for the benefit of the slave. When people are suffering under apartheid, slavery, social, financial, economic injustices, that's for their benefit?
Unfortunately, the Apostle Paul says all things work together for good. All things. And when you look at the all things, it's not all good things. There are also bad things. So it's just a matter of saying in this particular predicament, what is it that I need to learn? What is it that God wants me to learn? I mean, we look at the life of Job. He had a life, first half and a second half. And in both halves, he would really say, there is a lesson that I need to learn. What is it that I need to learn? I know I'm innocent. I know I'm not guilty. But I am experiencing this because good and evil come from the Lord.
So from Christianity, we should never preach justice. We should never have Christians who are going to be activists who are going to preach social justice. We're going to preach economic freedom in our lifetime. No one should ever speak about land and equality, human rights and all of that. We should never speak about all of that. It's far from Christ, because according to what you're saying, Pastor, all works together for good. So even the poverty that people are in is engineered by God so that it can work for good, whenever that'll be. When people die in squalor in squatter camps, that's going to work for good. When people are raped and living in those in unjust conditions, living side by side with rats, with sewer systems, that's going to work together for good. Even if they die in that squalor, it's going to work together for good. Is that what the pastor is saying?
Partially. But what I'm saying is that we should also acknowledge that God has given us a power of choice. And unfortunately, other people will use that power of choice to do evil. But it does not mean that those that are on the side of good, those that are ambassadors of God, it does not mean that they need to be silent because all things work for good. They need to speak up. I mean, you look at people like your Martin Luther. He spoke out. He was persecuted. But there is something good that came out of that. It may not have happened instantly.
Which Martin Luther are you referring to? Martin Luther King Jr. or Martin Luther the Protestant, the Roman Catholic Protestant monk?
The Roman Catholic one.
Okay.
Yes. So I think what is important when you are a believer in God and you understand that God is a God of justice. Whenever
He's a God of justice?
He's definitely a God of justice. It's one of His attributes.
Okay. Yeah.
So, when I see an injustice, I should not keep quiet and say, but all things work together for good. No, I need to speak, because you'd never know that God has appointed and anointed you to be the one that will be an instrument of ending that particular injustice.
Where was God's justice when David's daughter was raped by David's brother because of David? Where was God's justice when David's brother killed, David's son killed another one of David's sons because one of David's sons raped one of David's daughters? Where was the justice in that? Isn't that God who said, because David stole Uriah's wife, the sword would never depart from his house? So the sword that killed and raped in David's family was not because of the children themselves. When David's daughter was raped, it was not because she begged to be raped. It's not because she did anything wrong. She's simply suffering the consequences of her father's actions. Where is the justice in that? Where is the justice in David's son being killed by his own brother
Why? Because of their father. Where is the justice in them suffering the consequences of their father's actions? Where is the justice in that, Mfundisi?
Divine retribution.
I will. Yo, we're going to swap everything to holiness, Mfundisi. Go on, Mfundisi.
As I was saying, that some certain things that God do or does, we don't make sense of them because we are not God. Some of the things, of course, we may say, but this is not fair. And of course, we are justified in saying it is not fair. One rabbi says, he loses everything and he says to God, I don't like this, but it's okay. I accept it because everything is from you. I don't understand it, but it is okay. So we may not understand some certain things. Why is it that because of the sin of this one, this other one now must be punished, now must suffer? At the end of the day, God will still account. We would still have an opportunity where God would actually explain himself so that we may understand why he did certain things that he did, that we felt that they were really unorthodox.
So what exactly is the pastor saying? Is God still a God of justice when we see so many of his actions and decisions that are blatantly and flagrantly unjust? Are you still saying God is a God of justice, even though he has not demonstrated justice?
100%, he's a God of justice. Even if God can do an injustice to me personally, I would still say he's a God of justice.
Isn't that self-contradictory, though? Yes, he's doing unjust things, but he's still a God of justice. Reconcile the two for me, Mfundisi.
You know, it's very tricky to put it in a way that it would not sound as if it is not a contradiction. Maybe let me make this example. I went to school with my friends. We sat in the same class. We all graduated. After graduating, they get employed. I don't get employed. We are still doing the same work. 5 years goes down the drain. 7 years goes down the drain. They are still employed. I am not employed. Is that just? Someone looks at it and he says, but it's unfair. You look at the conference and where I'm sitting, I'm like, no, it is fair because God is the one that directs everything. I can plan, but God directs the footstep. What if it is not time for me to be in that space? What if God does not want me in that space? Yes, I may be languishing or saying, when my friends are able to amass 1, 2, 3, and I'm unable because I don't have the resources that they have, does that make God unjust? No, he's still a God of justice. So I just need to accept God's will. Even though it's unacceptable, I must accept it.
So, what do you say to this person? Because it appears as though this person is trying to understand that very same murky, miry mud of confusion. Yes, we see it's unjust, but it's godly. How do we preach to people then? Do we preach godliness even though it's promoting apartheid and slavery and poverty and suffering? Or do we preach justice and ignore the Bible and its God
I think our preaching should not be to convince people, but our preaching should be to reveal God. Whether we reveal the actions of God, the positive and the negative.
It's in the face of those actions of God, Mfundisi, that people ask. It seems as though God is unjust. God kills the firstborn sons of the Egyptians, and yet the firstborn sons are not Pharaoh's. It is the Pharaoh, one man, who took a decision, and yet all the firstborn sons die. Children, infanticide, Mfundisi. Yeah?
He would also say, Pharaoh also killed my firstborns.
Oh,
he killed my children as well.
We don't have any record of any firstborns being killed by the firstborn sons.
I agree. When we look at it, he refers to Israel as my firstborn.
I'm okay with that.
And during the time of Moses' birth, all the males were killed. And God would then say,
they were killed by one man.
Myself.
I'm okay with that. They were killed by one man, Pharaoh.
Yes.
They were not killed by the firstborn sons. Why do the firstborn sons have to die for their father and grandfather's actions? Huh?
Unfortunately, visiting the iniquities of...
I went.
Yeah. I tell you, unfortunately.
The third and fourth generation.
I tell you.
And that's justice, Mfundisi. Generations, right, four generations suffer for actions they did not commit. For sins they they have never raped a day in their lives, but they're going to die for rape. They've never committed murder in their life. Four generations are going to die for murder. They have never thieved or stolen anything or robbed or enslaved anyone, but they will die and suffer for that. Is that really justice, Mfundisi? Really?
Yes,
really? How is it justice? Explain.
Maybe let me make this example.
Yes.
That will also spice it up. We look at Daniel 6.
Right.
120 men, they conspire against Daniel.
Okay.
And because they want to conspire against Daniel, they discuss this thing with their wives. They discuss it at home. Mm-hmm. And neither of their wives or their children actually went to the king or to Daniel himself to say, hey, man, there is this plot against you.
Mm.
Daniel is thrown in. He is saved by God. And these, they say, nah, I know. Then God says, okay, let's hoy them in there. And not only these guys that were conspiring, but with these wives of them and their children, because they knew, but they did not speak. That is justice.
I hear you. I hope the person who was asking the question also feels your question, your answer to his question. Thank you very much for your time, Mfundisi.
Thank you so much.
All right, we do this again tomorrow with the good pastor, him answering our questions and you asking them. Keep them coming. We'll always find you a pastor who's going to answer your question.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.